content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Washington Post. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Well, when you think about getting away, many things probably come to mind, but I suspect your first thoughts might not include a getaway to a tiny house. Not to worry, writer Andrea Sachs shares her experience in a September 11, 2020 Washington Post article. With no contact and substantial space, getaways' tiny houses were ahead of their time. And as we're going to learn, tiny houses are still with us and are available for that unique getaway. In fact, there's one opportunity not too far away. We'll tell you more. At getaway, the tiny houses are separated by at least 6 times the recommended amount of social distancing space. Check-in is contactless, and all communication with staff is maskless reach. I could satisfy my hankering for, say, s'mores and Walden by the fire without leaving my protective bubble. Most important, I would be exposed to more spiders than people, an advantage during a pandemic. Getaway is naturally about socially distancing, said John Staff, who founded the company with his Harvard pal, Pete Davis. No part of the business was about hanging out with other people. The mod cabins are built for our current reality, even though they date from a simpler time, 2015. Staff and Davis, who has since left the company, created the retreat for overworked urbanites tethered to technology. Turns out the pro-nature, antisocial model is a perfect fit for a global health crisis, too. With hotels struggling to recover, occupancy rates are still under 50%. Getaway is thriving. The company, which operates the cabins at 12 locations in 9 states, reported a 99% occupancy rate in July and August and a 260% spike in bookings from May through July. Most of the outposts are more than 90% full through October. The Shenandoah Valley property, where I recently stayed, is at 99.8%. The getaway colonies are no more than a 2-hour drive from such major urban centers as Washington, D.C., New York, Dallas, and Los Angeles, a common round-trip commute for many city folk. Each property contains about 30 to 50 structures on double-digit acres of sylvan land. The company plans to open number 13 in New York's Adirondacks by the end of the year, as well as expand some outposts. For example, the Virginia property will unveil 9 2-person cabins and 2 4-person accommodations on December 21st. Quiet time in nature should be part of a wellness routine like meditation or yoga, staff told me after my visit. If you're stressed out, you should be able to pull a ripcord and be sitting at a campfire. To be sure, dropping out and into nature is not a novel concept. Take Henry David Thoreau, whose transcendent ruminations sit on every getaway bookshelf. The Virginia property is near Shenandoah National Park, where Depression-era President Herbert Hoover escaped the stress of the White House at his Brown House. The park rents cabins, though many are not as isolated or self-sufficient as the tiny houses. My cabin at Skyland Resort shared a wall with strangers and with no cooking facilities. I had to venture out for meals. I also had to wait in line, several lines, to pick up and drop off my key, report the leaky sink, and order my free cup of coffee, consolation for the resort's decision to remove the coffee makers. The getaway in Standardsville, Virginia, is only 100 miles from D.C., but my journey there took several months. I first booked 2 nights for late March at the pre-inflation price of $99 a night, which included a free future night stay. I am wistful for before the virus deals. You'll see why in a few sentences. Weeks before my trip, I had to cancel because of the emerging health crisis. Months later, I tried again. In early July, I checked the booking calendar and found one available date at the end of the month. I pounced on it, but someone with quicker mouse reflexes grabbed it. I looked at August and saw one opening on a Thursday night. I nabbed the house, paying $341 for one human and one dog. When I asked staff about the price increase, he said the company was capping rates at $299. I reminded him about the taxes, which pushed the price into the mid-300s. Check-in time is a firm 3 p.m. The company texts the cabin name and code to unlock the door no more than a half hour beforehand. I received my details at 2:36 p.m. The staff asked guests not to enter any earlier in accordance with their stringent cleaning process. They did, however, send me a map of the getaway neighborhood in advance so I could find my cabin and learn the names of my neighbors. I was staying in Hank, and my neighbors were Felix, Lenore, Carol, Shirley, and Forrest. The structures are named after the grandparents of employees and special guests. Hank is the granddad of one of the cabin builders. The 34 houses resemble upscale trailers for Keebler elves. They were bark brown and rectangular, with two wheels anchored to the earth. In the side yard, a picnic table and Adirondack chairs formed a crescent around a fire pit. A bin labeled campfire kit contained bundles of logs and kindling, which cost $6.50 and $2, respectively. To ensure privacy, the company placed the fire pits away from the neighbors' prying eyes. From my seat by the fire, I could not see Felix's blaze, and I imagine the reverse held true for Hank. Inside, eastern white pine covered nearly every inch of the 142-square-foot space. I felt as if I were inside the hollow of a tree. The layout is intuitive and ingenious, a jigsaw puzzle of architectural design. There's a bathroom with a toilet and shower, a kitchen with a two-burner stove, mini-fridge and sink for teeth brushing and dishwashing, a table and chair, and up a few steps a queen-size bed dressed in crisp white linens. The entire wall by the bed is consumed by a picture window framing a not-so-still life of the forest. I brought my own food, but didn't need to. A pantry drawer came stocked with rustic gourmand provisions, including Amy's tomato soup, a pound of Allegra penne ricotta, Bob's Red Mill organic oatmeal, Mao Fang green tea bags by Tea Pigs, and Kuju coffee pods. Now, prices range from 50 cents for the hot chocolate to $7.50 for the pasta sauce, hardly the minibar markup of traditional hotel rooms. As a welcome gift, the staff left me a s'mores kit and, for Sienna, dog treats with the same flavor profile. Since the pandemic, some members of the hospitality industry have been pitching their accommodations as an office away from home. Getaway is proposing the opposite. This is a sacred place where you do no work, staff said. To remove any temptations, the cabins do not come with Wi-Fi, and a lockbox encourages guests to stash their gadgets for their stay. Those without discipline might need a vault with a closure stronger than a clasp, maybe a lock controlled by Oz-like staff. For instance, music, I stream tunes from the old-fashioned radio. Sienna and I set out to explore the 80-acre property, an uncluttered setting with a new winding road, a few winding roads, and groves of trees. I saw guests at ease, two boys swinging in a hammock, a dad roasting hot dogs for his daughter, a Siberian husky sitting as still as a garden gnome. I glanced, but didn't engage. We jagged left to a network of interlocking nature trails. We ran into a couple with their dog. This is like King's Dominion for the pups, the owner remarked from the opposite side of the creek, as the dog sniffed their approval. On our way back to our cabin, I noticed a man on a cell phone, but the loud chatter of insects drowned him out. Back at the house, Sienna climbed into bed, and I considered activities amenable to self-isolation and tech deprivation. We encourage you not to do very much, staff said. Be inside your cabin, be outside your cabin, do nothing at all. I perused the little library, selected Getting Away by the Getaway co-founder, and told Sienna to make some room. The book came out in June, but staff clearly wrote it before the pandemic. In the introduction, he addresses the perils of another era. The digital age has left us unbalanced. He recommends 75 ways to regain your equilibrium, advice that is as relevant today as it was in February. I started with the section titled Balance Yourself. He suggested writing in a gratitude journal, meditating for 5 minutes a day, and turning off your push notifications. Before I knew it, I was practicing lesson number 4, sleep. In the morning, I received a text apologizing for being the bearer of bad news. We would have to vacate by 11 a.m. Hank needed to get ready for the next group of guests who might be seeking balance or maybe just a good long snooze in the forest. Now, coming with the article is a if-you-go kind of tip. You stay at Getaway. It's located at 2010 Madison Road in Standardsville, Virginia. They have a website, getaway.house. That's getaway, all one word, .house. The tiny houses are open year-round and come with a private bathroom, hot shower, full kitchen and fire pit, wood, cost extra. Bring your food or raid the pantry, which offers such staples as pasta, soup, oatmeal, coffee, tea, and beef jerky for a charge. Now, there's no Wi-Fi, though at the Virginia property my cell phone service was strong. And she adds, in the event of a bad connection, each cabin comes with a red phone. And now the rates range from $199 to $299, depending on the season. You can add $40 for pets. Now, you can rent a tiny house in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, which is only about an hour's drive from Raleigh. It's called River Entwined and is a collection of 20 boutique tiny houses crafted just for this idyllic setting by the banks of eastern North Carolina's Tar River, the largest tiny house hotel of its kind in the world, as a matter of fact. Located on the innovative Rocky Mount Mills campus, River Entwined offers guests unique accommodations in walking distance to the Mills' world-class restaurants, breweries, and event venues. And I might add, I've gone there and taken a look, and sure enough, you just step across the street from one of your little cabins, and you're there in less than 5 minutes. It's all very convenient. Now, nightly and extended rentals are available in River Entwined's 20 tiny homes and 3 guest suites located in a renovated 1900s mill house. Whether you're seeking a destination off the beaten path or just passing through eastern North Carolina, nestle in and untwine in the heart of the region's most exciting new development. And you can find out more on social media outlets, and you can use @RiverEntwine and visit their website, which is RiverEntwine.com, RiverEntwine.com. Maybe tiny houses are not what you desire for your getaway. Writer Allison Kruger offers another option in her article. It's all in the fine details for upscale hotels seeking to elevate guest experiences. And her article appeared in the August 2nd, 2020 issue of the Washington Post. When Randy Friedman walked into her room at Las Algapas, a boutique hotel in St. Helena, California, she felt like every detail had been planned just for her. The layout offered an unobstructed view of the vineyard outside. The balcony had a gas fire pit and 2 rocking chairs. The fire would be turned on with the press of a button. Waiting at the minibar was a French press with a tiny jar of coffee next to it. The grounds were already measured. All she had to do was pour them into the press in the morning. In her bathroom shower was a bar of handcrafted grapefruit mimosa soap, made locally by Napa Soap, which she could take home as a souvenir. "I walked away feeling like I was taken care of," said Freeman, a frequent traveler who works for Hearst Magazine in Manhattan. "Like this hotel actually cared about me with the extra touches." Gone are the days when it was enough for a hotel to have rain shower heads and high thread count sheets. In a world where there are more hotels to choose from than ever, both luxury and business accommodations are focusing on the extras to set their hotels apart from the rest, said Barack Hershowitz, president of the International Luxury Hotel Association. Great luxury hotels since the late 1800s have always focused on innovation and tiny details, Hershowitz said. Cesar Ritz, considered by many the grandfather of the modern luxury hotel, was the first to introduce a bathroom in every room in 1893 at the Grand Hotel in Rome. Today you wouldn't imagine a hotel room without a bathroom, but back then it was a small detail that changed the industry. These days, he says, it's other things that impress guests, such as floor lighting that activates when the guest steps out of bed to help guide them to the bathroom. And the more extraordinary, the better. Today's guests are very discerning, said Tony Stockel, a global brand leader of lifestyle brands at Marriott International, who oversees the Moxie, AC Hotels, Aloft, and Element brands. They travel a lot, and they want to discover something new when they travel. They have to have a story to tell. For Michael Schmidt, General Manager of the Waldorf Astoria Chengdu, the best special touches are personal. The hotel sends guests detailed questionnaires about the purpose of a trip, and so his staff can better anticipate visitors' needs once they arrive. For us, he says, innovation revolves around making the guest experience more comfortable, more pampered and seamless. Now, Los Agapas co-owner Samuel Lorezic says, I want to remind my guests that they have arrived. Some hotels are partnering with lifestyle brands to give visitors an experience to talk about. Guests who book a suite package at Le Méridien Hotels and Resorts receive a lipstick created by French beauty brand La Bouche Rouge. They simply dial zero for the concierge, choose a lip shade from a menu, and it's delivered with a bottle of sparkling wine. The guest initials are engraved on the lipstick case. We want our guests to remember that the French lip is a state of mind, said George Fleck, vice president of global brand marketing and management for the brand. It's about bringing back the romance of travel, he says. Sometimes that means maximizing the impact of the hotel's location. At the Waldorf Astoria Chengdu, in the heart of Chinese city's high-tech zone, window curtains automatically open and hotel guests step into the room, revealing an impressive view of new skyscrapers. When I travel, I want to feel like the hotel is better than my home, said Ann Burns, a retired speech and language pathologist from Potomac, Maryland, who visited the property in March. Unlike others who say you only sleep in your room, I love to stay in my room and enjoy it. Many hotels have special touches that provide guests with a sense of place, such as using certain materials in their design. The lobby reception desk at the Hyatt Regency in Bangkok has panels covered in gold leaf. The same material is seen on the Thai Buddha statues. The lobby of the Buenaventura Golf and Beach Resort in Panama City incorporates repurposed wood from the Panama Canal. At the Hyatt Regency in downtown Denver, the concierge team offers free beer tokens for guests to use at an eatery across the street that serves a rotating list of handcrafted Colorado beers. The Hockton Hotel in Brooklyn displays books in its rooms that were donated by local business owners, artists, and residents. The donors write local recommendations for the hotel guest inside each book cover. Jupiter Next, a hotel in Portland, Oregon, partners with local businesses to offer special packages highlighting everything from donuts to tattoos to cannabis. Other hotels are winning over guests by leaving presents for them. Each Kempton Hotel leaves a locally inspired gift in a guest's closets. For example, in Palm Springs, California, guests receive a 9-inch emerald green statue of a camel. It is a nod to an antiquated California law that makes it illegal to walk a camel down certain streets between the hours of 4 and 6 p.m. At the Bankside Hotel in London, housekeeping leaves a yellow box of Guatemalan wary dolls on pillows. The instructions say that guests are supposed to whisper their anxieties to the dolls before they sleep, transferring them to the dolls and out of their minds. Then there are touches that are meant to go unnoticed. In Marriott's headquarters in Bethesda, Stockel has a concept room where he tests every part of a hotel room. For example, we have many iterations of lighting systems to figure out the easiest way to maneuver them, he said. We don't want to be one of those hotels where you have to wake up early to spend time figuring out how to turn on the lights. At the end of the day in our industry, a lot of the focus is on delivering unique, memorable experiences, he adds, and often those are achieved through very small moments. Maybe your idea of a getaway goes beyond an upscale hotel or a trendy tiny house. Maybe you'd like to put work aside and hit the road to see what you can discover and experience. Writer Emily Gillespie made that happen, and she shares what she learned in her article, Want to Tour the World for a Year? Here's how to save, prepare, travel, and re-enter. The article appeared in the March 6, 2020 issue on the Washington Post. Stranded at the Bolivian border with next to no money, no internet, and severe flooding that prevented us from going anywhere, my husband and I took refuge in the only lodging available in the tiny border town, a bunk bed in a cold, leaky, cinder block building behind a family's home. To warm our bodies and our spirits, we ordered a hot meal and ate dinner alongside a German couple who were also stranded. They shared their wine and we shared our story about how embarrassingly unprepared we had been to cross from Chile into Bolivia. Without hesitation, they handed us the $150 we desperately needed for my visa. The next day, the skies cleared, as did our misfortune. I nearly danced as we crossed into Bolivia. Again, without money, we hunkered down on the side of the road, hoping to get a ride with a passing motorist. As if on cue, a scruffy dog curled up at my feet, providing unexpected comfort during the wait. When we were eventually picked up, I left our last bit of food with our new companion. This travel blunder is one of my fondest memories of the year my husband and I spent traveling the world. These situations, moments when all you can do is laugh, and others when you discover the most tender parts of humanity, happened countless times. For me, they're the best part about traveling. By most standards, what we did is abnormal. Most 30-somethings wouldn't quit their jobs. My husband had a full-time position in marketing. I was a freelance journalist with a contract gig to traipse the globe for a year. But, in my opinion, we shouldn't be the exception. It's common for people to make long-time commitments to focus on their education or their careers or their families. For the entirety of 2019, my husband and I focused on our souls, as cheesy as that sounds. We ate food we'd never heard of, explored places we'd seen only on maps, and said, why not, to almost every opportunity presented to us. We soaked in every sunset, opted for the scenic route, and ordered another round when the conversation was good. We were truly present. It's an experience I can't recommend enough, and it's not as out of reach as you might think once you get over the mental hurdle of doing something society, or maybe just your family, doesn't expect of you. The rest is as easy as getting on a plane. Saving for the trip. Surprisingly, saving up the funds to travel was the easiest part of our preparations. First, you need a goal, a number highly dependent on how and where you plan to travel. After months of research and conversation, we decided on a goal of $50,000, which would allow a daily travel budget of $100, with an extra pot of money for some big excursions, for example, a week-long safari in Botswana and a multi-day trek to summit Kilimanjaro. That may seem like a small daily budget, but in places such as Peru, you can find a dorm bed at a hostel for as low as $3, and in India, you can sleep like a king for $20 a night. It took about 4 years to meet our goal while maintaining a lifestyle we were happy with. I'd recommend setting up an automatic monthly bank transfer to a special account, perhaps one at a different bank. Doing this will force you to take a hard look at your expenses and decide what you are willing to do without. We canceled our cable, ate out less frequently, went to fewer shows and concerts. But during the approximately 4 years we saved up, we still traveled. We went on several international trips and spent many weekends away with friends. Preparing for departure. Though we saved for about 4 years, all the preparation happened in the 12 months before our departure. This made for a pretty complex year, filled with a list of things to do before we hopped aboard our first flight. Decide where to go. For me, saving money sounded difficult, but ended up being easy. The opposite was true, however, for deciding where to go. We wanted to see it all. Our budget helped us make some decisions. Because we wanted to keep costs low, we largely skipped Europe, and though they were high on our wish list, Japan and Australia. Neither of us had been to South America, so we chose to spend our first 4 months bopping around that continent. Our next stop, we decided, would be Africa. My husband and I met in South Africa in 2009 and hadn't been back since. We planned to start at the tip of the continent and snake our way north before ending our year in Southeast Asia. Do your research on visas and always bring U.S. cash. While most visas can be figured out as you go, some require advanced planning. For example, to go to Brazil and India, you should apply online about a month in advance, and a visa to visit China has to be secured while you're physically in the United States. Our Bolivia border fiasco taught us one important lesson in traveling. The U.S. dollar is king. We eventually obtained more American currency, as it is required payment for several African visas. Many visas also require passport photos, so bring extras with you. Get your banking in order. While saving for the trip, find a credit card that will earn you the most miles or points per dollar spent. Before we left for our year abroad, we had 3 credit cards, each loaded with 100,000 miles, enough for 3 pairs of ocean-hopping plane tickets. Also, set up your money in a bank that has no foreign transaction fees. Much of the world prefers dealing in cash. This way, you won't get gouged with ATM fees. Discard excess stuff. The question of what to do with all your stuff was a tricky one. Using a storage unit would add a monthly cost to our travel budget, so we took a hard look at what we owed, and Marie Kondo'd our belongings. Luckily for us, both of our parents had room for a few items of furniture in their basement and a few dozen boxes in their garage. Buying a fire safe for our important documents also gave us some much-needed peace of mind. Plan for the worst. This includes travel insurance, which acts as medical insurance and protects you for things like lost luggage and unexpected trips home, such as a family emergency. Visit a travel clinic before you go to get all the vaccines and medications you'll need to stay as healthy as possible. We left the country with 360 malaria pills. This sounds morbid, but I would also recommend making sure you have a will that is up to date. Pack light. Packing will depend on your destination. Keep in mind that you can usually find anything you need on the road. We rented sleeping bags for our 8-day trek in Nepal, and I bought a pair of lightweight pants for dressing more conservatively in the predominantly Muslim countries. Items I wouldn't leave home without include a clothesline, toothbrush cover, external battery, and water filter. While traveling, be flexible. The best part of traveling for an extended period is the freedom it allows to stay longer in places you like and to get out of Dodge when you're not feeling it. Being flexible will also make it less frustrating when things go sideways. Trust me, you will get sick and be forced to spend a few days lying low. I highly recommend buying local SIM cards so you can make any kind of booking on the fly. Having the internet at your fingertips also allows you to download the local taxi apps, read restaurant reviews, and quickly Google the proper tip for a Kilimanjaro porter. Travel blogs also help. Next is how to re-enter. The best way to help with the return to your old life is to have a plan in place before you leave. My husband and I saved up a cushion for the months it would take to find work again. We also had made plans to stay with my in-laws when we returned and had left a few boxes of clothes and some easy-to-access spots. Be kind to yourself. It takes time to come down from having fun, a new place to explore every day, and exciting activities forever on the horizon. You won't find work immediately, and you'll have down days when you'll daydream about watching wildlife on an African savanna or scootering from beach to beach on a Greek island. Pick yourself back up by doing things you missed while abroad. Hike your favorite trail, cook up the meal you miss the most, or meet a friend for happy hour. And don't talk too much about your trip. People will say, "I want to hear about your trip," but the hard truth is that most don't really want to hear too much. Less because they don't care than because they can't relate. Even starting off a sentence with "when we were in Turkey" can make eyes roll. And be open to change and even living somewhere new as a part of this. And during your year of travel, you might learn something surprising about yourself. Maybe you'll realize you're a much happier person in the sunny weather, or you can breathe more easily in the fresh mountain air. So lots to learn on that worldwide trip, huh? Hope you've enjoyed your journey today on Armchair Traveler, that you'll be listening next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.